Senator Martin Heinrich, and he is here to speak with you today. I know you have much to inquire about, and we've got some seats for you.
Great. Awesome.
Where's our classroom teacher? This is Mr. Hunt right here.
It's really great to be with you here this morning. We're going to be announcing some new legislation today called Degrees Not Debt that seeks to modernize the country's Pell Grant system. And this has grown out of a frustration that I've had for quite some time now. I graduated, I'm young for being a member of the U.S. Senate. I'm probably really old to all of you, but I graduated from college about, 22, 23 years ago now. And at that time, student debt levels were dramatically lower than they are today, in part because tuition was lower, in part because the Pell Grant actually covered much more of tuition at that time. And I've sort of watched as particularly over the last 10 years, the amount of average debt that students are graduating from college with has just gone up and up and up. Student debt in the United States today is north of $1.4 trillion, with a T. That is more than the credit card debt in the country. And one of the things that has driven that is that college states have put less money in recent years, especially after the recession about 8-9 years ago. They stopped funding colleges at the state level. And New Mexico is guilty of that. We actually, the state of New Mexico puts about $4,500 less per student into the college, public college system today than they did 10 years ago. And that just gets passed on as additional tuition to all of you when you go to college. We have seen also the cost of college grow five times faster than the rest of the economy, which is not sustainable. And all of that sort of compounds in student debt upon graduating. And when students graduate from college with additional debt, that means that it takes longer to buy their first car after college, to certainly buy their first home, to make all kinds of other investments that actually benefit the whole economy. So we're going to be introducing legislation today to modernize the Pell Grant. It will actually increase the Pell Grant from the current $6,000 per student per year amount up to $10,000 per student per year. And it also sets a number of requirements on universities, public universities who use the Pell Grant, so that in the past, one of the frustrations that I've had and that we've seen all too often is that when the Pell Grant goes up, that money just moves into other things within universities. It gets used to build stadiums or new dorms or for overhead rather than going directly into education. And so our legislation is going to attempt to create a number of transparencies where you can compare one college to another. You know not only what the tuition is, but what the average debt is when kids get out of that college, what their employment rates are post-college, and create a number of safeguards so that the increase in funding from the Pell Grant doesn't just increase the tuition at that college or get used in ways that are not directly beneficial to your education. And it will be available for universities that commit to their pre-recession levels of funding. So for New Mexico, that means that they're going to have to step up and fund at pre-recession levels, and that would apply to states all across the country because we've seen states across the country defund higher education in the last 8 years, and we want to really reverse that trend. So that's one of the reasons why we're here today is to announce that legislation. We're going to be announcing it statewide today as well with the news release. But I also want to hear from all of you, especially because you're part of this program, about your plans for college, what you're thinking about, how you're deciding where you want to go, what your concerns are, what your financial considerations are, whether you're going to study in-state or out-of-state. I would really love sort of a window into what you're thinking right now and what next year looks like for those of you who are, is everybody here a senior? No. Mixed? So especially for those who, folks who are seniors, like what are your considerations as you go through that process? And then I'd love to know for all of you, how many of you come from a family where your parents did not go to college?
Show of hands.
Okay, about half. Excellent. That's really helpful to know as well. So if we could sort of start a conversation.
Just raise your hand and he'll acknowledge that and he'll be able to take your questions.
How about if you tell me first your name, what year you are in school, and what your college aspirations are, and then any question you want to ask me?
Well, I got a question.
Okay.
My name is Amber Martinez. I'm a junior in 11th grade here at Middle College High School. And my question is
questions, those aren't allowed.
My question is, how will this bill affect the tuition of Native American colleges and universities on the reservation, and how would the Pell Grant help me in that area?
So it would mean, you know, the utilization rate for Pell Grants among tribal students is very high, and typically the average income for households going into college is relatively low compared to the average across the country. So in this case, for folks, tribal students who were coming from a family that makes $75,000 or less, they would get the full $10,000 contribution towards their tuition, whether it is a tribal college like SIPPY, whether it's a state institution. For all of those, they would get a full $10,000 federal Pell Grant towards their higher education. Amber, was it?
Yeah.
So what are you thinking of studying in college? What are you interested in, and where do you think you might want to go?
I want to go into majoring of chemical engineering.
Great.
Here at UNM.
Okay.
And I'm thinking that would be great for me. So
we need more engineers. There are only two engineers. I'm one of them in the entire United States Senate. And actually, if you look around the world at other government bodies, we're way behind in the number of scientists and engineers in government. So a few years down the road, you might think about that too.
In your conversations with legislators across the aisle, and on the Democratic side, what kind of support do you foresee having for this legislation?
One of the conversations I think we need to have as a country is, what are our priorities going to be? And, you know, we just went through a debate in the House and Senate where the majority chose to pass a tax cut that costs $1.7 trillion. Most of the benefit of that is being passed on the corporations that are using that for stock buybacks. That does not demonstrably and meaningfully help a lot of people in the state of New Mexico. I have an enormous amount of frustration with that, because if we're going to spend $1.7 trillion, obviously we could have erased all of the student debt in the entire United States, which would have freed up college graduates to move on to buy that first car, to buy that first house, to make other investments that would have benefited the entire economy. So what we're proposing with this legislation is to repeal a piece of that tax cut, a piece of that is used by largely very upper income earners, and instead make an investment in our students and say that that at the federal level, we're going to invest in having an educated workforce, that college is really the new high school degree in many ways. It is incredibly important to have either a certified trade school behind you or a four-year college degree to be able to start and not be behind right out of the gate. And so we want to make an investment in that. That is an idea that is growing with a lot of my colleagues, but I would not say a majority yet. And I think that's a conversation that we need to have, that we need to force in the Senate and as a country, about what sort of investments we should be making in our economic future.
My name is Bobby Shack.
What grade are you in, Bobby?
Oh, my God. I'm one of the instructors here at Middle College High School. My question pertains to the length of time that the Pell Grant will be allotted. So presently, isn't it set
semesters.
To...
12 semesters.
Okay, from 8 to 12 now?
Trying to remember, what is current 8 or is current 12? I think current is 12. And Elizabeth, my education staffer, will be here, and she lives and breathes this stuff. She's a former teacher from the central part of the state, and she would know that for sure off the top of her head. But what we have some additional legislation called the Middle Class Chance Act and another piece that seeks to extend that to 15 semesters because we have a number of students in New Mexico who take a couple extra semesters to get and oftentimes work while they're going to college. I would also like to see the Pell Grant available always year-round, which is something we've actually accomplished in recent years as we were able to get into one of the spending bills, being able to use the Pell Grant in summertime. That's also really critical for New Mexican students. We find that students who go to college year-round not only graduate faster, but have a higher graduation rate because they stay engaged in school and don't end up, leaving college partway through during a summer semester.
And then a second question. If, let's say, for instance, that one of my students here has a family whose gross income is beyond $75,000.
It's a partial contribution.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, so tell me what you teach here, too.
I teach English.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Great.
My name is Mallory Bayless. I'm actually...
Sorry, is it Mallory?
Mallory Bayless,
no.
Yeah. I'm a senior here, uh-huh. And I'll be going off to Arizona State University next fall. And being as we're talking about student loans and everything, pertaining to FAFSA and everything, my family is middle class. We, pay our bills on time and everything, but we don't make enough that they can just send me to college outright.
Right.
But, because of my FAFSA award and everything, I wasn't awarded anything from the government at all. Like, I think the only thing I qualified was a $5,000 loan. So, is there anything in this bill that's going to make headway for middle-class families or, try to help students that don't necessarily qualify for
sure.
larger grants? But
right.
Is there anything?
So it's a partial it's a full contribution up to $75,000 in income, and then it's a partial contribution from there up. And Elizabeth can sort of give some of those numbers because I don't have them in front of me right now. But I think that is also a reason why not only do we need to modernize Pell, but we also need states to step up again and meet their former contributions. If you look at the state of New Mexico, we're putting $4,500 less per student in. I guarantee you that passes through to what those tuition costs are. I don't know Arizona off the top of my head, but we've seen that same dynamic in almost all states across the country. And then we also need more, we need cheaper ways to finance higher education. So right now, if you take out a loan, a student loan, a government student loan, you get locked into an interest rate. Now, you can refinance your home mortgage or your car loan or just about any other loan you have, but for student loans, you get locked in. And one of the other things we're trying to do to help middle-class families is to change that so that when interest rates are low, you can roll that student loan into a much lower interest loan.
My name is Braden Trujillo. I'm a junior here at Middle College High. And in this America's College Promise Act, there's a part in it that says that it's only open to community colleges. And in the future, do you see private schools being included in this act?
I don't necessarily see private schools. That was really focused, that particular legislation was focused on community and technical colleges, public community and technical colleges. Tell me a little bit about, did you say you were a junior?
I'm a junior.
You're a junior. And what are you thinking about studying and where?
As of right now, probably just in-state NMSU at and physical therapy or sports medicine.
Great.
Yeah. My name is Preston Benally. I am a junior here at Middle College High.
Preston, did you say Benally?
Yes, correct. And my question is, would if you were awarded this grant, would that stack with the New Mexico Lottery Scholarship?
Yeah, sure would. That's a great point, is that, so, you know, one of the ways to make college work is to have contributions from multiple sources. And New Mexico's Lottery Scholarship on top of a modernized Pell Grant gets you most of the way towards tuition at most New Mexico institutions. I think UNM right now is a little over $7,000 for tuition, but then you've got about another $10,000 in room and board over the course of the year. So that puts you at about, what, $17,000 a year. If you had $10,000 from Pell and you had, $5,000 a year or $2,500 a semester from lottery scholarships, you're starting to make a real dent in that education. And that's part of the point here is we want the state to step up. We want the federal government to step up. We want people to make a contribution as their income level goes up to their own education. But it has to work in aggregate. Like right now, we just have way too many students who are graduating with a mountain of debt at the end and literally can't get ahead of it for multiple decades. And we want, you know, I want to see your generation be able to come out of college with little or no debt so that you can put those contributions towards your future, towards your family, towards the kind of investments that best benefit the economy as a whole and also your professional career. What do you, Preston, what are you thinking about studying?
I'm thinking about studying civil engineering at New Mexico Tech.
Fantastic. And I would put a plug here for Tech. They're not only do they have a great engineering school, but they have really reasonable tuition when you compare them nationwide. So that's a great choice.
My name is Marcella Garcia, and I'm a junior. And I want to know if this bill goes into effect, will it affect students who are already in college? Like, will it give them a bump or
it
something?
Would. Yeah.
Okay.
So the idea would be to have. It's once it passes, then the Pell Grant will change at that point, from that point forward.
I'm Josh Pretty. I'm a sophomore here at MCHS. I was just wondering, so we have the chance of graduating with an associate's degree.
Right.
So if we do graduate with an associate's degree and we go on to college, could we use that grant to graduate with a bachelor's?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you would be able to use that grant towards whatever tuition started as you roll into your four-year university. So if as a freshman, instead of taking, your core classes, you're taking upper-level classes, then you would simply apply that grant towards those upper-level classes instead. So you would be that much ahead of the game as a result of that. And I assume if you don't graduate with an associate's degree, that you may still be taking some AB classes that apply towards those core curriculum. Is that or not?
Most of them are going to finish with college core completed.
Okay.
Yep.
Yep.
Whether it's a traditional.
Some sort of courses that would count towards their core curriculum. So, and tell me what you're thinking about studying.
I'm thinking about studying.
Maybe. Where?
Okay.
What you want to do with it?
I'm thinking about studying missiology at Indiana Bible College.
Okay.
And I want to go into the mission field in Africa. So,
that's a big continent. Do you have a country picked out?
Zambia.
Okay. Fantastic.
For my mom, she's already graduated college and she graduated with a bachelor's. And she still has a mountain of debt. Could this affect people who have already went through college?
It would only apply towards additional college, so it would not apply retroactively.
Okay. So if she went back to college, would it affect her, or?
If she qualifies,
okay.
Yeah. How many seniors are there in the room?
While this legislation doesn't directly address predatory lending practices by some questionable institutions, are there ways in which that can also be addressed?
There are a number of ways to get at that, and some of them are at the state level, some of them are at the federal level. I know we have seen, I sit on the Armed Services Committee, we've actually seen returning veterans targeted in ways that we're trying to crack down on through the annual defense authorization bill. But there are a number of different ways to get at that. It's largely something that is regulated at the state level and something that needs attention from multiple levels of government.
Do you see the recent shakeup in the VA and Schulte's firing impacting on all of the things that you're wanting to do for veterans seeking education?
The place I'm most concerned right now is just, the vacuum of leadership in the interim, and then what happens moving forward. Is this a prelude to privatization, which is what we are hearing from a lot of sources in the federal government right now, and that this was a result of a disagreement over how to proceed there. I do not want to see a privatized VA as somebody who, you know, my father passed away a few weeks ago. He was very much somebody who got his health care from the VA and really preferred it to all other sources. And that is not to say the VA is not without problems, but I don't think privatization is the solution to those problems. And so I think whoever may or may not step into that role, that much of the debate you're going to see is about whether we have a public VA like we do now or whether we move towards a privatized VA, which is not something I'm supportive of.
Senator, I have a question. I graduated my undergrad from Michigan State back in 95, and I think I did so with about...
Spring of 95?
That's right.
Yeah, me too.
We're the same age, I think. And I believe at that time it was about $22,000 in student loan debt, which by today's standards doesn't sound like a lot, but...
It was a lot at the time.
Sure was. It took probably 18 years to pay that off.
Right.
And I remember that at the time there was the Stafford loan, and there was loan forgiveness for particular fields that maybe you would go into. And I remember I didn't qualify because the Republican Congress had just eliminated Stafford from being a qualifying loan the year before I moved out to New Mexico and would have been able to apply for that. Do you know what's being done in terms of any loan forgiveness? Is there anything tied to that in this bill? Or
not in this legislation, but that is something that other folks are looking at through legislation. There is some loan forgiveness within specific fields. Obviously, the medical field is one where we've seen that employed a lot. I think it's probably a really smart way to address some of the gaps that we have in workforce. Trying to, even if you can't do that across the board, to target those places where we're having a hard time filling jobs right now. What was your degree in?
English education, the master's in counseling, and a doctorate in the humanities.
Excellent. So. I remember, you know, I was able to make a lottery scholarship and frankly, working while I was going to college, I was lucky. I was able to graduate without student debt. My wife did have student debt, and I, you know, seeing the burden that that put on her, especially in the first 5 years out of college, and how much more intense, acute that is today, is pretty incredible. Elizabeth, we saved all the hard questions for you.
Great, bring them on.
I have a seat right here for you. He was actually asking about the status quo with Stafford.
Well, we're waiting on the higher education bill to be reauthorized, and the Stafford interest rates. Currently, there's been a lot of discussion.
So Elizabeth Hill is our education staffer, as well as covering a number of other issue areas in her portfolio. She is a former teacher from New Mexico, worked in Rio Rancho up until, 2007 or 8?
2008.
2008. and then applied for a position in my house office has been with me through 4 years in the House of Representatives and now 5 years in the U.S. Senate.
I taught at a school called Puesta del Sol Elementary School. I was a fifth grade teacher, and my mother was a first grade teacher there for 20 years before me. So. Excellent. It's a great district. I enjoyed my time there. So let's talk Higher Education Act. It's currently up for reauthorization, and the committee, the ranking member Murray and the chairman Alexander have been going through a negotiation on what the next higher education bill should look like, whether we're talking keeping the Stafford interest-free student loans when you're in college, or whether we should do some consolidation of the repayment programs. So they're currently in negotiations about what that bill should look like, and unfortunately those negotiations are going very slow. But that's also one of the reasons why Senator Heinrich is here to talk about the bill that he would like to introduce and will be introducing shortly, because we want to help inform that conversation on what should the next Higher Education Act do, how should it help students, and how should it help colleges and universities.
So what, maybe 2 years ago now, mm-hmm. we revised Elementary and Secondary Education Act. So one of the interesting, I don't sit on the HELP committee that deals with education, but we remain very active in those conversations because they have such an enormous impact on New Mexicans. 2 years ago, we actually saw what was called No Child Left Behind rewritten, and with a pretty amount of overwhelming support from both sides of the aisle. At a time when most things are pretty hyper-partisan, Senator Alexander from Tennessee, Senator Washington from, or Senator Washington. Murray from Washington, are both people who know how to compromise and how to get things done. I think that served us well in that debate because we were able to pass a piece of legislation that completely rewrote No Child Left Behind, made some improvements that students and teachers have been asking for a very long time. And we're hopeful that the higher education legislation will be able to move forward because we have some leadership on that committee who knows how to get things done. That is not always the case in Washington these days, as you've probably noticed. But unfortunately, right now, those negotiations are moving slowly.
So I understand that there was a question that about what would happen to your Pell Grant if your parents made over $75,000. Just like the current Pell Grant, once you make over a certain threshold, that Pell Grant, we call it, kind of descends down. And so a family who might be making $80,000 wouldn't be eligible for the whole $10,000 Pell Grant that we're proposing, but would be eligible for a smaller portion of that Pell Grant. So the higher the income your family might have, just the less or the more they would be expected to contribute to your college tuition instead of having the Pell Grant pay for it.
What's the number when it comes to your?
What is the number currently?
What's the income level have to be? To be
at zero?
Anything up to 75, right? $75,000.
But the Pell Grant going to zero.
Oh, where does it go to zero?
There's not an actual cap on it currently. It depends a lot on your family assets. If you had five kids in college, you would be expected to contribute a lot less than, say, someone with only one kid in college. So you could have a mortgage, you could have five kids in college, and you could get more than one person who might only be funding one child. So there's no actual cap on where that comes to zero at this time.
Jim, do you want to take a minute and introduce yourself too and talk a little bit about what you do for the office up here in northwestern New Mexico? So,
sure. My name is Jim Dumont, and I am a caseworker and field rep for Senator Martin Heinrich. I'm based in Farmington, New Mexico. I have a coverage area of San Juan and McKinley County. So I'm often in the Gallup area about once a week. As a caseworker, people come to our office and they ask for assistance more often than not with a federal issue. since Senator Heinrich has been in the Senate, we've had about 7,000 people approach our office and have helped for ask for help with, say, Veterans Affairs, Social Security, IRS. And out of that $7,000, we've been able to return about $8 million to New Mexicans. These are people that were owed past due VA benefits, IRS income tax rebate, back Social Security payments. So that's a big part of what we do. And we think the numbers of constituents that have contacted us and the amount of funding that we've been able to get back to New Mexicans, we think that that clearly illustrates our commitment to the states and the people that we serve to as well.
So I have a number of offices here in the state, including Farmington, and then Jim spends about a day a week down here in Gallup, you know, one in Albuquerque, one in Las Cruces, one in Roswell, and I'm, what
Santa
am I,
Fe.
In Santa Fe. And oftentimes people will call those local offices with an issue. And if it's a policy issue, they might get connected to Elizabeth or somebody else in the Washington office. If it's a casework office, it might be something that is just handled right there at the local office. And we encourage folks to get to know all of our staff at the local level so that if you have a family member who's got a VA issue, who's got a IRS issue, an immigration issue, any of those federal nexus issues, you should feel free to call our office.
Are there any hurdles in dealing with the Department of Education at this stage?
There are lots of hurdles in dealing with the Department of Education. We have a secretary that is definitely taking a different tact than most secretaries in the past. That is causing a lot of challenges. There seem to be a number of challenges with regard to equal access under this Department of Education. And, you know, I think that as long as Secretary DeVos is in this position, that will probably continue. I think one of the places that's been a bright spot in some of these departments is that while the Trump administration has taken an approach in their budgetary role, that the Congress, despite the fact that the Congress is majority is of the same party, oftentimes we've been able to prevail through the budget process in a very different set of priorities, both in terms of spending and policy, than what the White House has had. And earlier you asked about the VA. This is one of those places where even though we have real challenges with leadership right now at the VA, we were able to put an investment in VA resources in rebuilding its infrastructure into the recent budget bill that will have a direct positive impact on VA facilities all across the country. That was not something that was pushed for in the Trump budget, but that Republicans and Democrats in the House and Senate were able to agree on.
Senator, I have a question.
Sure.
Middle College High School is a public charter high school.
Right.
And I know that in the state of New Mexico, there have been some attempts for charter management organizations to come in and try to bring corporate charter schools into the state. And I applaud the state for putting up barriers to that and keeping that illegal. Just wondering, charter school, not a private school.
Right.
You know, schools like ours with an innovative focus, is there room for us in what you're seeing?
You know, I hesitate to throw everybody in the same charter basket,
right,
because we see really great programs, and one of the reasons why we wanted to come here is looking at the accomplishments of this school,
right,
and what and how that stacks up as an example. And we've seen charter schools that have been, an utter failure as well. I do think there is a role for charters, but I think one of the reasons why in New Mexico charters have been less controversial than in other places is that New Mexico has been resistant to sort of cookie-cutter, out-of-state, for-profit charters.
Right.
And I think the approach that has been taken here has been part of the reason why we've had schools like this one, others around the state that have been not only successful but also had
a lot of community support from across the board.
I think one of the approaches that the center has taken in D.C. is looking at how we can replicate good charter schools, or how we can at least look at supporting charter schools like yours with staying within what New Mexico has chosen to do, and allowing for that homegrown growth of charters. So we've been very careful about, in this new administration, about ensuring that we're supporting this type of growth, because it does allow for students to have an option that is a public option that is a fit for New Mexico.
And it ought to be, you know, it ought to be about local needs, local innovation, student needs, not about a, you know, national for-profit corporation.
That's right.
Yeah.
My name is Austin Yazzie, and I'm a 11th grader, and I go to Middle College High School. And I was wondering if, when this bill passes, will there be an increase in taxes?
The short answer is not across the board, but yes, it would be paid for. So what we seek to do is to roll back two of the provisions in the tax cut bill that just passed, having to do with alternative minimum tax and estate tax. And those would pay for the investment in education. So we go back to 2017 tax levels for those two areas that largely impact very high earners, and use that to pay for the increase in the Pell Grant. So there's no free lunch.
Yeah, my name is Philip Norton, and I'm a sophomore here. And I was wondering, how much of an increase in the Pell Grant would this bill appropriate?
So the full grant would move from $6,000 currently to $10,000. So it would be a substantial increase over the current rate, a more than 50% increase. And Philip and Austin, what are the two of you thinking about studying after high school?
For me, I'm thinking about studying anatomy, okay. Actually going into the medical field, yep. Working at a hospital, being a surgeon.
Great. Philip?
I'm thinking about going into the law, mm-hmm. And I'm also thinking of studying at a private institution called Concordia University, Nebraska.
So have you guys gotten a chance to, when you talk about going to a different, these different educational institutions, have you gone on to their homepage and looked at their scorecards and looked at the Department of Education's website on those issues? I see some heads shaking.
We've got one senior in the corner, so she's probably done the most research.
Did anything surprise you when you looked at those scorecards, or when you were looking more carefully at colleges?
I got into the Honors College at ASU, and I actually received the Presidential Scholarship there academically, but it doesn't even cover 70% of my tuition.
Right.
It's very low, and what I've learned from my teachers and other people is that Arizona is notorious for not giving out very large sums of money for academic achievements, so that's kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
One of the things that we're hoping to achieve with this legislation is that for some universities do a really good job of sort of putting all the information out there. Others, not so much. And so we're trying to seek some transparency in not just tuition, but a number of other metrics, so that when you're looking at 5 or 10 different colleges, that you have an ability to sort of have a little bit of an apples-to-apples comparison across all of those institutions.
One of the services we provide for our students, we have a class we call Seminar, in which we focus on college and career explorations. And I'm the sophomore advisor, as well as my colleague, Mr. Michael Kunanen, right there. And not too long ago, we had students begin a scavenger hunt on college websites. And you should have seen their eyes pop out of their head when they saw how much it cost
to attend these institutions. And so now our new focus is, okay, now that you know how much it costs, well, how are we going to cover this?
Having that same experience.
That net price calculator and what it's going to cost for tuition and fees, room and board, yeah, it can be quite shocking because tuition sounds doable, but then you add everything else on top of it.
And this is all stackable, you say. Like, this is my wife here, and we have a set of four-year-old twins. And, of course, we got them established really early in the 529s. But
oh, great.
So all those dollars can get stacked on top of one another, correct?
What this is going to do is just set a floor of $75,000. There might be other assets that you can contribute to the tuition on top of that. But we set a pretty clear goal of anything at 75 and below, zero family contribution. And then you could use your 529 to go ahead and pay for room and board because, you know, by that time, we're knows what tuition will be doing.
More and more, we are looking at the need for anybody who's going back to school to also be working. And whether it's a work-study situation tied in with student aid or whether it's an independent job to supplement, are there any programs that help assist students who are looking for work that ties into their campus life?
I mean, I'm glad you mentioned work study. That's one of the most important, vulnerable, and successful pieces that we have of helping students go to school. Right now, we're looking to contain that and keep it because it has been under attack.
And there are different programs, you know, there are almost as many programs as there are universities, so it really depends on where you land, too, in terms of moving beyond work study into other work situations. I do think that we need to be careful that the rising cost of college does not manifest itself in people working too many hours at the detriment of them being able to fully dedicate themselves to their studies as well. And so while, you know, I certainly work was an important and valuable part of my college experience, if I would have had to have doubled the amount of hours I was working, I would have seen my grade slip, there's no question. So, you know, making sure that we sort of catch the right balance there is also really important.
With many adults who work on university campuses where there are tuition remission programs, they may be able to pursue education, but at a very slow rate because they have full-time jobs. And piecemealing, they might get that degree, but it might take them 8 years.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that is certainly something we see quite a lot of in New Mexico is people, you know, getting their degree but stretching it out over a number of years because they have to hold down a full-time position as well.
And the Pell Grant tops out at 12 semesters, so if you're going anything beyond that, that could really dig into that.
Are there any more questions from the students?
My name is Liam Donnelly. I'm a current student at MCHS. I'm a sophomore.
Sophomore, great.
Sophomore.
Excellent.
My question to you is, with people going to college and stuff like that, you're going to have people that are going to drop out, people that are not motivated. How do you determine that people are motivated and they're getting the money to go to these colleges? What happens to the money afterwards, after they drop out or eventually stop going to school?
I mean, I think that's a really good question. We're concerned about people persevering. And out of when we see debt and debt default on student loans, it's from folks like that. So and one of the key pieces is ensuring that people are picking the right college, the college that is actually fit for them, that they know the costs up front. That's some of the indicators the senator was talking about, student satisfaction rates at the college as well, picking at the college. And just by hopefully allowing people to be working less by providing a larger Pell Grant, people will persist. But I agree that that is an issue, and that's definitely a topic for conversation that we've had.
Obviously, some of that's individual to the student, but a lot of it is also how the college manages the student experience over the course of those 4 years. And one of the reasons why we create a metric system is so at the front end, you can figure out whether you match up with that college or not. And how many of this, you know, at the end of 4 years, how many people come out the other end with a degree in hand versus, you know, maybe go 2 years, not actually get a degree, but have a fair amount of debt that you have to service. That's sort of the worst case scenario. We really want to move away from people not getting a certificate or a degree that they can use in the workforce, but still having the debt that comes with college education. Because they have, those people in the workforce really have a double whammy against them right out of the gate.
Where would that money go? So someone completely drops out, right? So
it would still apply towards
whatever education level they complete, because it does apply at a semester by semester rate.
Say you're going to school, one school over there, and you're like deciding, hey, I want to go to this trade school, and you switch over. Would that money still be able to transferable to that school?
Any qualifying institution would be able to use the Pell Grant.
My name is Aaron Alejo. I'm a current junior here. And my question is, how will this affect immigrants or students with a student visa who come from other countries, of course? Will they receive this money?
If they're currently eligible for the Pell Grant, then they would be continue to be eligible.
So there are a set of eligibility requirements that are set in law now with Pell, and
there are some blackouts that have to do with non-citizens.
Does your office offer like any kind of student internships with your DC office with high school students?
And so we offer internships. Here in state, and then for college students, we actually offer internships in the Washington office as well. And I'm one of a relatively small number of senators who pays interns, because I think, especially in the Washington office, it's just not feasible for most New Mexicans to do an internship if they don't have income, because it's so expensive in that. You know, rental market. I would urge you, if you know someone, get in touch with our office. They'll put you in touch with whoever's coordinating the internship program for that semester, and the more applicants, the better.
I think it's a great way to send off. We really want as many New Mexicans and a diverse array of New Mexicans from all parts of the state. So even if you don't plan on going into political science or anything in this realm, it's still a worthwhile way to spend 6 weeks in your summer.
It really is. And we've had, I will tell you, we've got one internship program that UNM manages through the Fred Harris interns. And, you know, they effectively function like staff in our office. They come very prepared. They do all kinds of things for us. And it's really... It's good experience for them, but we get a lot out of them as well. And we've had many of those Fred Harris interns actually then move on to become staff. And so a large proportion, you know, and not inconsequential proportion of my total staff are former college interns.
So if you're interested in that, grab a business card from Jim here. I have to say, these were some of the best questions we've ever had when talking to a high school class. So please give yourselves a round of applause.
Thank you all.